Just taking back over the course of this last week, a fair bit's happened really in the US. The first and most important part is that the fiscal stimulus spending package, $1.9 trillion, and in amongst that, there's $1,400 US checks that get posted out to just about everybody. That's like helicopter money, and it's being monetized as well with the aid and assistance of the Fed. And on top of that, the extension of unemployment benefits all the way through to September. So huge income boost for the household sector. And unsurprisingly, it also marked a pretty significant win for President Biden getting his legislative program through, because you know this package was something that the Republicans thought was way, way too expensive. And so if you can get that through, you can get most things through the House. So yeah, that accounts for part of the surge of optimism we've seen running through U.S. assets over the last day or two. The second part of it was the second wind that was already starting to show in the US economy. And where that came through was the non-farm payrolls report. We had had 3 months of slower non-farm payrolls growth at the tail end of last year. It flickered higher in January, although January, as it turned out, was a lot stronger than previously reported. The January reading of non-farm payrolls was revised up from plus 49,000 to plus 166,000. But the real surprise came with the February reading, and the February reading was expected to be up 165,000. It was up 379,000. So you know, there's a significant second wind for US economic growth coming through in the first quarter, and that's before you get any of this spending that's coming through from Congress at the moment. So yeah, that gives you some idea that yeah, we're going to get some pretty strong numbers starting to run out the United States over the course of the next few months and few quarters. And that's what obviously markets are starting to focus on. And if interest rates are rising a bit, well, so be it. That's a consequence of stronger economic growth. Still expect the Fed to lean into that. That was the message we got when we heard from Jerome Powell through the course of the week. He's not doing anything at the moment. He's playing his cards very cautiously. He still thinks there's a long way to go for the economy to recover. Some of the other figures that came out last week which point to this revival, things like January construction spending, double market expectations. They were expected to be up 0.8%. They rose 1.7%. The ISM February manufacturing survey, leading indicator, was expected to be 58.8. It roared above 60.8. Above 60 is rare for this survey, so a very, very strong leading indicator reading. And it was almost there with the services sector too. So we had the services sector, the non-manufacturing ISM, that one actually came back a touch to 55.3 from 58.7. But the alternative PMI reading actually went up to 59.8. So a little bit mixed readings in the services sector, but not looking too bad at all. So factory orders, another one too, rose 2.6% month on month after being up the revised 1.6%. That was revised higher going back to December. So a lot of strength there starting to run through US statistics with a huge tailwind obviously behind it now. This week, the focus will turn to, well, what does it mean for inflation? And we get two inflation readings out of the US this week. On Wednesday night, we'll get the CPI, and on Friday, we'll get the producer price index. They're virtually the only readings of note really coming through the course of this week. Both of them, the headline basis, are expected to be up about 0.4% month on month. And what that means is that the CPI will probably lift a little to 1.7% from 1.4% year on year. That's still nowhere near a problem as far as the Fed's concerned. But there is a little bit more price pressure in the pipeline in the US than in most other countries. And the producer prices, which come out on Friday, they are expected to rise 0.4%. So that will lift the annual rate of change in producer prices to 2.7% year on year from 1.7% going back to back to January. So those figures will be watched. With the way in which the economy is showing such strength, and of course risk assets are running off the back of that for the time being, they might get another challenge from higher bond yields as we go through the later part of the week as these inflation numbers come through. These figures still don't prove that we've got a secular lift in inflation. That will still take a lot of time because we've still got some excess capacity. And you go back to the non-farm payrolls. The unemployment rate, although it came down, only came down one notch last week to 6.2%. And as I say, remember, before COVID-19 set in, we were down at 3.5%, and the Fed still wasn't tightening at that point. So they've still got a lot of excess capacity to use up before the Fed starts to consider lifting interest rates. In China, we've had some data too, both last week and over the course of the weekend going into Monday. And first of all, we have purchasing managers' reports. These all settled back a little. They're still okay. They're over 50, all of them are above 50, which is the expansion-contraction point, but they're not quite as far above as they were the month before. So the manufacturing PMI, the official one, came back to 50.6 from 51.3. The non-manufacturing PMI or services one came back to 51.4 from 52.4, and the private sector versions, often looked on as being more reliable than the official figures, the Kaixin surveys for the manufacturing PMI came back to 50.9. That's actually not too bad from 51.5. It was a pretty strong reading the month before. And the non-manufacturing PMI too came back to 51.5 from 52. But then yesterday we had an indication, if you need any, that the global economy is taking off like a cork out of a champagne bottle. Now, China, like it or loathe it, is still basically the factory of the world. And their trade figures are highly sensitive still to lifts in international economic activity. And the February export numbers came out. Going back to January, exports were already starting to rise strongly and giving a clear sign that global economic growth is really lifting. Back in January, exports were up 18.1% year on year. The market thought this would about double, more than double, to 38.9%. Now, that's a huge number. The number that came out was 60.6% year on year. Now, that suggests that global international trade is just going ballistic. And it was there on the import side of their trade figures too. Going back to January, imports year on year into China were rising 6.5%. Market thought this more than double because there's certainly been quite a lift in manufacturing activity and industrial production in China. And so they thought it probably lifted about 15%. It lifted to 22.2% year on year. And if you want a sort of just a corroboration of that, just look at where the iron ore price is. Despite analysts always trying to call a top on this thing, it's challenging $174 a ton. And a lot of global commodities are actually under a lot of upward pressure. And part of that's the story of our GDP, and I'll come to that when I come to Australia, and why, it's one of several reasons why we're doing really well at the moment. This week, later on, we'll get some CPI data out of China too. Again, they'll be watched for a similar reason around the world. The global economy is really starting to roar, and it's got tailwinds really pushing it along. So at some point, you expect inflation, these are going to be watched. It won't be a problem for the Chinese CPI, that's still below zero year on year, and it's expected to actually decline a little bit further to minus 0.4% year on year from minus 0.3. But rather like the US, producer prices are showing some signs of life, and producer prices are expected to lift from 0.3% year on year to 1.5% year on year. So some life starting to show there, but a long way to go before they become a particular problem. Then we come to Australia, and just about all the figures that came out last week showed considerable strength. It started with a pretty insignificant one, although it's pretty important for the labour market, and that's the ANZ Jobs Ads Survey for the month of February. And those were up 2.6%. It was revised upwards to 2.6% year-on-year back for January. The month-on-month actually lifted to 7.2%. So there's some evidence in this that, you know, we're going to get quite a, we don't really need a second wind because our labour force numbers are actually improving very, very rapidly, more quickly than expected. If anything, that's going to get better. Then we ran to January housing finance, and January housing finance value, excluding refinancings, you know, it was already up very strongly the month before, a revised 7.1% month on month. Lifted again to 12.3% month on month, is up over 40% year on year. And the leading edge of this, which is first-time home buyers, is up over 70% year on year. So, you know, the combination of low interest rates and the boost to income here are really starting, well, they've been going for some time, but there's no way that this housing market is turning anytime soon. It's still got a lot of tailwind behind it. We also had January home building approvals. A little bit bumpier here. We've had several really strong months. You know, going back to December, you know, we had a lift of 12% in the month. But we did drop 19% for the month of January, but we were still up 20% year on year. So, you know, this is the sort of volatility you expect in these. When we get to the February numbers, we're probably going to get a bump straight back upwards again for those figures. We had the fourth quarter balance of payments numbers, and we're running record current account surpluses now on balance of payments because of our trade performance, and the current account's gone all the way out to $14.5 billion surplus for the quarter from $10 billion going back the quarter before. And that meant that net exports, which detracted from Q3 GDP last year, 2 full percentage points. Now, the detraction came all the way back to a better than expected minus 0.1 percentage points. Before I get to the RBA, I'll just look at the GDP numbers because, again, considerable strength running through these figures. And so, yeah, we had, yeah, the market consensus was 2.5% quarter on quarter for GDP. It rose by 3.1% quarter on quarter. The previous quarter was revised up from plus 3.3% to plus 3.4%. And that meant that the annual change in GDP improved from minus 3.7% year on year in Q3 to minus 1.1%. Quite likely, when we get the Q1 numbers in April, we'll be through the zero mark and we'll have positive change in GDP on a year-on-year basis. In other words, we'll have recovered all that huge loss that we had running through the pandemic. The driving force was entirely on the private sector side. Now, most of the contribution to that 3.1% came from household consumption expenditure, up over 3% quarter on quarter, and that contributed 2.3 percentage points of that 3.1%. Another 0.7 percentage points came from private investment spending, and 0.4 percentage points of that 0.7 came from housing, split between real estate transfers, which is real estate agents doing roaring business. Their business was up 15% in the quarter. Another part of it came from construction of houses or residential investment, and that was up over 7% through the course of the quarter. So between them, they each contributed 0.2 percentage points. The other 0.3 came on a 7% lift in investment spending by businesses in plant and machinery. First time we've seen businesses starting to invest again. We had it heralded in the private new CapEx figures that came out the week before. So this was a private sector surge in spades in the GDP numbers. Everything else, government spending, net exports, inventories, all netted each other out roughly in the calculations. Now, the issue is, of course, this won't necessarily be sustained as we go forward. That's probably the high point for our quarterly GDP numbers, because as we go into Q1, you know, again, we've got some pullback running through government support payments. The really interesting part about that huge surge in household consumption spending in Q4 was that it came against a backdrop where household disposable income actually fell by over 4%. And that was because there was only a 1.4% lift in wages, way overwhelmed by the pullback in government support payments that occurred, the first pullback in government support payments that occurred through the course of that quarter. As far as the households were concerned, that didn't matter that their income went backwards, but it drew down savings. And so we had more than a 6 percentage point drop in the household savings ratio from 18.7% in Q3 down to 12%. Now, in the best world in the world, I can't see another 6.7 percentage point drop in the household savings ratio in Q1. We may get a 3 or 4 percentage point drop, but you're going to get a much smaller contribution from household consumption and expenditure in the current quarter. And it's going to be the same sort of configuration. We'll have pretty good wages growth, but it's going to be overwhelmed again by the second stages of pullback running through income support from the government. So, we will be coming back more into the ones, one point something for GDP growth as we go further forward. But remember that when you go back to the first half of last year, the relevant quarterly GDP reports were minus 0.3%, and then in the second quarter, minus 7. So when we get to the second quarter of this year, we're going to be replacing on the base minus 7 with a plus 1 point something. And this is where the annual growth in GDP is going to have the most enormous spike, up to about 8.5% year on year. It won't stay there because then it starts to pull back again. But we've still got some pretty strong numbers to run through Australia as we go ahead. The other feature in those numbers that I mentioned was we get production-based GDP as well. There's 19 separate industry categories. And of the 19 industry categories in Q4, 17% experienced positive growth. And that's a record. Never seen that before. So a lot of industries were really starting to recover in the fourth quarter of last year. That was despite stop-start in restrictions and all those sorts of bits and pieces. And one or two of them were spectacular. One of the key features there, why regions are doing so well in Australia, was the agricultural sectors having a real boomer. And their output was up 34% quarter on quarter in real terms. They've had a huge improvement. And on top of it, they've had better prices. The terms of trade lifted something like 5% quarter on quarter. That was those commodity prices coming through, and much of that soft commodity prices. So for the time being, we're riding high, and which is why the RBA keeps on getting caught behind with their economic forecasts. They can't catch up with the way in which the economy is improving. And that's going to continue probably through the first part of this year. Now, going back to the RBA, still on the same old page, and that is we recognise that the economy is doing better than we forecast, a lot better than we forecast, still got plenty of excess capacity, watching wages and watching employment. That's still got a long, long way before it recovers, and that's still true, but it's not as far out as 3 years. And so they're still on that 3 years before we change before we change the cash rate. The bond market's gone a little bit early in terms of expecting interest rates to rise, but somewhere between the bond market and the central banks is the truth of this. And so my best guess when I'm trying to look at these GDP numbers and see at what point do they put tension back into the labour market, lift wages growth well above 3%, and then you've got some reason to expect consistently higher inflation. I still can't come much earlier than late 2022. So I'm probably among the most optimistic of some of the forecasters. I still can't get much before late 2022. And that's when we get GDP growth consistently running 3 to 4% year on year over a period where it's starting to lift wages. So that's where markets are going to fluctuate around. Bond market from time to time is going to go early. It'll get hit by central banks from time to time. and of its own accord from time to time, it will come back. There'll be the beginnings of a gentle trend line upwards running through longer term bond yields, the short end still held by the central banks. So a bit of volatility in this, but in the very near term, as we saw this week, whenever things get sold off a bit for risk assets, they come back with a boomer because of the way in which these economic numbers are still moving. This week in Australia, we won't get much more data. We've got business and consumer business confidence and business conditions from the NAB survey for February coming out today. These should actually improve on what they had last month. They were at plus 10 and plus 7. Those are reasonable readings, but I expect they're going to improve a bit. Westpac consumer sentiment coming out on Wednesday, that was up 1.9% last month. I expect to see it lift more than that this month and reach a record high. It's to do with vaccination starting, it's to do with the unemployment rate still coming down, the announcement of that GDP number, all of that suggests that households are still pretty comfortable, and of course house prices rising as well. In Europe, not a lot happening in Europe other than that slowly but surely it will be picking up too. The vaccinations are starting to take care of things. We had the UK budget this week. They extended what they call furlough there, which is their equivalent of income support all the way through to the later part of the year, albeit with some increases in taxation for companies to partially pay for it, but broadly speaking, still very accommodating. And in Europe itself, last week we had the manufacturing PMI came out, starting to lift again, 57.9 from 54.8. That's a pretty big rise. So a leading indicator, they're going pretty well. Their CPI is still showing no signs of being a problem. The February CPI came out 0.9% year-on-year, the same as before. The services sector PMI, taking longer to pick up because they've had more shutdowns than anybody else, 45.4 to 45.7 in the February reading. And still in January, they had a pretty ugly retail sales reading, down 5.9% because they shut the place again to get on top of COVID-19. But in time, Europe's going to pick up as well. This week in Europe, we've got some investor confidence numbers which will lift probably to plus 1.9 from minus 0.2. A revised Q4 GDP, which is now very old, but we'll start to see some of the national figures in that. They were down minus 0.6% quarter on quarter in Q4 and down 5% year on year. And an ECB meeting, where the ECB meeting will confirm that it will do and provide whatever support is needed. So broadly speaking, pretty good numbers starting to come through. Well, the United States is on a pickup. We were always doing better than most, and we're going to continue doing that with the numbers that come through here. Bond market trying to push yields up from time to time, then coming back, still quite a way before the central banks start to ratify any of that. So we're still in what you call the Goldilocks spot, and it's still not going away for quite a few months.